All righty, welcome to it. You bet. Another edition of the Employment Law Show. John Scholes here, and my good pal, lawyer Chris Justice from Sanfiru Tamarkin LLP is on board for the hour. And if you have questions about your workplace, maybe your relationship with your boss, maybe a simple severance question, could be something a little more complex, doesn't matter. It can be answered over the course of the next hour. You just got to pull up a chair with us right now to answer all those questions and go on through the hour and make you that much smarter. Reaching out beyond that to Chris and his cool cats at the firm. He's got a great team with him as well. 1-855-821-5900 to do so. And then help@employmentlawyer.ca is the email address. If we got time later on this morning, we might get this to a couple email. But again, that contact information plus the website pocketemploymentlawyer.ca, that's free. Of course, anonymous, it'll teach you lots about the topics we cover every week on this show, and it'll give you access as well, free access to the severance calculator, which does what it says in the title. That's what it's called. It'll calculate your severance quickly and accurately and for not a dime. So check it out at Pocket Employment Lawyer. Even do that while we're talking this morning. That'd be just fine. A couple topics we want to try to get through both in between the phone calls and everything else, Chris. Number one is employee rights when a business is sold. And then later on, if we got time, mitigation 101. Let's see if we can get down the list for both of those topics as well. But we always start off, pal, with the case of the day. What do you got cooking on your end?
Yeah, absolutely. So today I thought I'd bring up a recent decision actually that came out of the Ontario courts, and it has to do with a worker, an employee, who was placed on a supposed temporary layoff, but during that layoff they sort of waited long enough and they had to take on another job. And so one of the key questions was, by virtue of taking on this job while this person was on a layoff, did that somehow constitute a resignation with respect to the previous employer, the earlier employer that that person had? So the court was looking into this, just a little bit of background. There was this worker, they were a funeral director. They got laid off in March of 2020, like a lot of people did due to the COVID pandemic. And as I say, throughout the following months, there was no return to work that was going on. There were some discussions that were being held between the worker and the company, but the company was still telling this person that they couldn't recall them back. There just wasn't enough work for them due to things relating to the pandemic. So, you know, there were some financial hardships on the part of the worker, which a lot of people also suffered. And that ended up forcing the worker to accept a full-time job at another company while they were still on this layoff right with the other one. And so, as it so happened, the company that laid the person off found out that they had taken on a second job. The company had assumed by doing this that the person had therefore quit their first job. And the employee that was on the layoff actually got a record of employment saying that they had quit. And that's sort of what sparked this case. So after all was said and done, the trial was held, judge weighed in. Court essentially found that the worker did not quit that first job just by virtue of taking on another. The court said that it was actually the first company's responsibility to get clarification surrounding whether this person intended on coming back or not. And so by just assuming they had quit by taking on a second job, court basically said you didn't do enough there. You had to make further inquiries. You had to clarify. There were some discussions even before between the two of you where there was a possible return to work. So on that basis, then the court decided that this person had actually been wrongfully dismissed.
Wow.
And was owed severance. Now, there was some discussion about whether there should be some sort of bad faith damages payable, something in terms of that. But the court didn't find in favor of the employee in that sense. It found that it was an honest but mistaken belief, maybe a little bit, jumping the gun.
Sure.
So they didn't get dinged in that sense. Yeah. But nonetheless, it was considered a wrongful dismissal and the severance was given. So it's just a cautionary tale for employers. Could be this kind of a situation or just anything where it's not unequivocal, the resignation, that is. You know, it wasn't something clearly stated or stated at all for that matter. And so if you're a company or you're an employer and you're sort of trying to maybe read in between the lines, but you don't make any further inquiries yourself and assume it, then, you know, you might get dinged like the company did in this case. And on the other side of things for employees, need to know that if you are going to resign from your job, it does typically have to be very clear and unequivocal. There are cases of people sort of storming off on a Friday and, you know, not coming into work on Monday, and then the company says they've quit. So there could be heat of the moment things, but it's got to be clear and unequivocal. And as I say, unfortunately, this particular company got penalized.
You know, it's interesting, Chris, you mentioned that heat of the moment resignation where you storm out of there and say, I've had enough of this place, I ain't coming back. You know, if you do it, say, yeah, in your example, on a Friday, you go over a weekend, then you wake up Sunday morning going, oh, what the hell did I just do? Do you have a certain window to take it back and say, just kidding, I'm coming back?
Yeah. There is sort of, I guess they call it a cooling off period, where if an employee maybe gets all riled up or some heated words are exchanged, and you know, like you say, it happens on a Friday, maybe they don't show up for Monday, so clearly could suggest they don't want to go to work, but nothing for an extended period of time. And let's say on a Tuesday or Wednesday, sorry, they sort of, you know, quote unquote, come to their senses or cool off or approach their employer and sort of, you know, say their piece and express that desire to go back to work and kind of resume things. Employer is going to be very hard pressed to say, nope, we've accepted your resignation, you're out of here. Usually a lot, you know, so even more time can pass for that cooling off period. And it'll come down to what actions the employer has now done in the face of all that. So if I'm an employer and someone storms off, they don't come back for 3 months, maybe they never said that they quit, but I've now gone and hired a replacement. You know, I've incurred some losses. In some situations, the employers can say, look, we've sort of relied detrimentally on this, so to speak, and maybe establish something, but usually a lot more time has to pass. And even still, they should be making inquiries just to be sure before, you know, like this other employer did, issuing records of employment, just saying, you know, you've quit, you file that with the government. And now this employee has a real tough time even getting EI because they're having to deal with a record of employment saying they've quit. So it can be a real mess for sure.
Good stuff. Again, phone calls, bring them on. We got the hour for you, 416-870-6400. Want to move into our main topic, or at least our first topic for the morning, Chris, and that is employee rights when a business is sold. So when a business is sold, do the employees automatically get severance? Everybody assumes, well, you're selling, where's my money, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we get into that, of course, this stuff continues to go on these days. I hear a lot of news coming out about, you know, acquisitions being made or purchases and sales. Sometimes it's a partial sale. Sometimes it's sort of a full sweep. And yeah, a lot of people are sort of maybe saying, well, what options do I have here? You know, can I just back out and you know, automatically get severance or whatever the case is? And the short answer to that is no. Severance in these situations is not paid out automatically. If you are out of a job as a result of the sale, and the second employer doesn't wish to take you on, then you know you're likely, of course, going to get your severance. But otherwise, if you're hired on by the new company, and that new company, let's say, inherits the service that you had previously, so you got now the full service there, you're not going to necessarily have as much leverage to automatically get severance. So it'll come down to the situation, case by case basis, for sure.
Just getting warmed up in this one. Want to skip over and grab a call? Always a priority. Joe, good morning. How are you, pal?
Oh, good morning. Thanks for picking my call.
No worries. What's up?
Yeah, my sister's going to lose her job. Her factory is closing at the end of this year. And they've given a notice and a lump sum payment totaling 83 weeks. She's been with the company for about 32 years. She's 59 and she's a general laborer. Is that a fair deal?
You said 83 weeks, was it?
Combined notice plus 48 weeks severance package for a total of 83 weeks.
That's like 20 months, right?
Yeah, maybe just a tad under 20 months. So, obviously very long service employee, definitely I would say in the category where the potential is to get as much as 2 years of severance, although that is generally seen as the limit in Canada. 19 or 20 months is certainly not a bad offer. A lot of times companies will do a bit of a mix where they give somebody working notice and they work a certain period of time, and then on their way out or as of their last day, they'll provide them with a lump sum. And for the most part, if companies want to do this, they'll be able to get credit for all of that combined. Sometimes people think if I have to work it out, it doesn't count. But that's usually not the case. They can do that. So I would say in this particular case, there could definitely be some movement, maybe not a ton of movement, but some movement nonetheless. And so I think it would make sense at the very least to give us a shout, have a quick consultation, and just confirm as much and, talk a bit more through it at that time and figure out if there's any other factors to consider.
One other quick question. They give it a deadline to sign the package and return it to them by, I believe, the 19th of April next week.
Mm-hmm.
I often hear you say there's only 2 weeks to sign. And...
Yeah. So this is a common thing, deadlines being given. People just need to realize that your rights don't expire after that deadline. It's usually a pressure tactic. At the very least, I reach out or have people reach out and say, I need some more time to review and consider my options. I need a little bit of an indulgence, and most, if not all, employers do actually give that. They don't want to be also seen as pressuring. And I think that's essential because you do want to get that good legal advice first before coming back and deciding one way or another on this package.
Okay.
Thank all right. So appreciate it, Joe. And again, have thanks, your sis reach out for sure to Chris and the team, 1-855-821-5900 to discuss that further. Not a problem. And for you, make like Joe. Give us a call. We got lots of open lines. We got lots of time this morning, 416-870-6400. We continue the Employment Law Show. Hang in there. You betcha. We're back at it. The hour-long show right now. Chris Justice is your guy from San Firu to Mark and LLP. Reach out to Chris afterwards anytime. Always to have that conversation. Won't cost you a penny to pick up a phone and have a talk. That's 1-855-821-5900 to reach Chris. And the email is help@employmentlawyer.ca. Want to get back into our topic here momentarily, Chris, of employee rights when a business is sold. But I was just thinking about Joe during the break who called us that his sister's looking at a decent severance package, a combination of working notice and some cashish at the end, totaling about 20 mm-hmm. months. He said it might be a little light. Then I was thinking as long as that, 33-year employee, I think he said, as long as that contains all the components of her work life over the past years, right? We're talking about benefits, maybe bonuses, car allowance, all that stuff, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Usually there's, at least two main things I look at when I'm trying to figure out if the severance package is fair. Number one, of course, would be the number of weeks or number of months in relation to that person's age, length of service, and the position they held at the time, and also what the availability of similar work out there is. But the other thing is making sure that whatever the weeks, months are, that it is a full week or full month that there aren't items being left out. A lot of times people will most often have their base wages covered, although mm-hmm. even then there's a bit of a dispute on what that's valued at. Sometimes employers will use a 12-week average and you're looking at a 1 or 2 or 3 year average. So it can get a bit tricky there. But yeah, you want to make sure that you get a fulsome week or a fulsome month, whatever that is. So bonuses, pension, benefits, maybe some, stock units or shares. Maybe you've got things that are set to vest at a certain point in time and then you get this cash payout or you can get some shares, like I say. So you want to, and I always think sort of as inclusively as I can and just include as much as possible because oftentimes there are 1, 2, or 3 things left off the table and someone thinks they're getting a year of severance, but it's really only maybe 70% of what they would have got over that year had they just remained employed. And then the other thing, and I might get into a little bit later today, is mitigation. If you're going to find a job quite quickly after you've been let go, or depending on how optimistic you are of finding work after you've been let go, that too can be a bearing. And actually, as we also know, contracts are important too. You could have an employee, regardless of how long they've been at a company, subject to some contract that they've signed, whenever that may have been. And in that contract, there could, of course, be language that speaks to how much they get on termination, even though we know it's quite rare these sort of things get upheld by courts. It's not to say that there aren't some well-drafted contracts out there that can kind of cause a bit of an issue.
It's interesting you mentioned about mitigation and finding work soon after or maybe not soon after you let go. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Joe's sister's case, 33 years, we got to assume she's not 25. It might be a little more difficult at her age to find work. But Can that be a little bit of a chess match with your former employee? Meaning that, okay, you've got this package, say it's equal to 20 months coming at you. Maybe you've got half of it in working notice. And then, as you mentioned, at the end of that, they're going to throw you a lump sum of some cash on your way out the door. Have a nice life. Thanks for working for us. Can you, if you know ahead of time, so if I'm working with you, Chris, saying, Chris, I got let go. I'm looking at 20-month severance coming at me. Half of that's going to be working notice. So I got to continue working in the workplace, which I'm leaving for half this. Then I get my money. But I already got a friend, unbeknownst to my current employer, that's willing to hire me in a week. So I'm going to bounce back. Do you have some negotiation tactics saying, hey, how about this, former employee? Instead of 20 months, including working notice, how about you give you 10 months money and I walk out the door right now, full knowing that you're working the next week? You don't tell them that, of course. But can you do that type of thing?
Yeah, you definitely can do that type of thing. I mean, like you say, in one particular case, it may just be more beneficial for somebody to take almost a discounted severance package in another form or fashion, whether it's lump sum or what have you, knowing or maybe thinking at the very least that they're going to land something soon. So it's not going to make sense to just draw things out, wait around, maybe negotiate at the very end. It could actually be, you know, detrimental to their interests. So that's certainly something. And the other thing, too, is that if you're being given working notice and you find a job somewhere else, if you end up leaving that job and just essentially quitting and going on to the next company, you could also potentially forfeit some or all of that severance package, too. So you want to be careful when it comes to working notice in the context of severance offers, that you're not maybe doing something along those lines. But yeah, absolutely. Or maybe you just don't want to work there. Maybe you see the writing on the wall. You're not that motivated. You don't want to work for a year before being let go. And you think, well, maybe we can negotiate something, you know, where I take a bit of a hit, but I can just cut ties now and go our separate ways.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Again, you got lots of time to phone in, guys, and talk to us here on air. We'd love to get you asking your questions live, 416-870-6400. But we started to dip into our first topic for the morning, employee rights when a business is sold. So you talked about the business is sold, you automatically get severance, depends on the situation with the new employer. So what happens to that employee's length of service if they continue working? I guess this can be, you got to read the fine print on this one as well, right?
Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, if you get hired on by the new company that purchases out the business, in most cases, that company is going to inherit the service you had from day one with the previous. So not often too much of a concern where you might put in a decade of your life to the first company and then that sort of now you're back to square one with the next one. No. You would generally be considered a 10-year employee at the time you start with the new company. And then as you accrue more service with that new company, it'll go up and up. But there is that caveat where you could join the purchaser, the buyer of the business. They, you know, maybe there's some discussions about inheriting your service, but they have you sign a contract. You know, going back to the importance of these contracts, they have you sign an employment agreement. And in that agreement, somewhere, maybe hidden in fine print, is something that says we are not going to recognize your seniority or your service with the prior company, or at least we're only going to recognize it to the extent we absolutely have to. You know, there may be some bare minimum recognition that needs to be given, but you know, they could still be getting away with shaving off 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 plus years with that previous company. So you want to be extremely careful or cautious when it comes to these agreements that you're being asked to sign. Especially when these takeovers happen. A lot of times I do see this where the new company will come in and have its own way of running business and have them sign a contract. And yeah, there'll be some clause in there about seniority or not inheriting this service, which could be a huge, huge issue. You know, you go from maybe, potentially a 30-year employee, let's say, to employee with only 3 months. And you know, tens of thousands, if not, are lost should, you know, that new company then turn around and decide to terminate you a few months after they take you on. You know, that would be a huge, huge issue. So, yeah, all the more reason to be super mindful of those types of contracts or situations.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, if you'd only worked there for a couple of years and then the new company says, we don't recognize your previous services, but it's still a great job, you're like, whatever, I'll suck it up. It's not that much. But yeah, if you're a 25, 30-year employee, to wipe out all your previous service, I would take a serious look at that before I signed anything and moved on for sure. Yeah, employee rights when a business is sold. That's what we're talking about. Does it matter? Signing contracts? I guess it depends, you know, if you want to do that or not. What happens if the employee does not want to take the new job with the new company? It's opposed to what I just said. They're like, this is a good time to skip town. Yeah. I want to do something else. I want to go back to school. Maybe I got another job lined up that I was looking at anyway. This is the push I need out the door. Is that a resignation? Are they entitled to anything? What do you think?
Yeah, so I guess if you have a good reason as to why you are not accepting the new job with the with the new company, in the sense that maybe the terms of that offer are quite significantly different from what you had with the seller, the seller right. business. Maybe you know the new company comes in and says, "Hey, Joe, we want to offer you continued employment with us." And then you look at the offer, and it says, you know, it has a completely different title or position. Maybe you're working 2 hours further out of the way of a commute time. Maybe the pay or the hours, you know, some key components of the relationship are changed. Then, you know, you're going to probably have a lot of leverage to say, well, hold up a minute. You know, I had this certain job with company A. Now company B is giving me a different one. I don't accept that. That's not what I signed up to do. Happy to do what I've been doing all these years, but this job is significantly different for ABC reason. In that situation, you know, as an employee, you're likely going to get your full severance. On the other hand, though, if the purchaser of the business offers you continued employment and it's essentially the same or exactly the same as far as day-to-day duties, pay, etc., and you just want to, you know, maybe retire, go to school and update your skill set, or now, whatever the reason is, but just, you know, spend some time with your loved ones, you're not going to have anywhere near as much leverage to get that full severance package like in the first scenario. You're still likely going to be entitled to a certain amount of severance, a bare minimum amount under the legislation. But, you know, that could also be the difference between 7 months and 24 months, technically. So or even maybe 8 weeks and 2 years. So there's a big difference in either scenario. So it really does, in a lot of cases, though, come down to why is it that you're turning this offer down? You know, is there, from the law's perspective, a more valid reason? Mm-hmm. Or is it just something that you, you know, just want to engage elsewhere in, or just have made that personal decision not to come back?
So if we go back and take a look at that contract that the new employer is offering, is there certain things that really, other things that really need to be red mm-hmm. flagged? I mean, can they put you on a 3 month probation even though you've been there for 25 years, but because they're a new employer, they can put you on that probation? Is that something you should accept, or can they even do that?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not something you should accept for that reason we were talking about, which is, mm-hmm. you know, again, probationary periods being about, let's assess the fit. You know, are you the right fit for us? Are we the right fit for you? And if there's something in there that says, you know, we can let you go without notice or without pay, or, I mean, definitely would raise a red flag. Arguably, though, wouldn't even be enforceable depending on the circumstances, like how many years, let's say, you had with the previous company. But yeah, again, in general, you know, the contract's important. The terms in that contract are important. And, you know, aside from things like just the nature of the job being different, there could be other terms in that contract that just didn't exist with the previous company. Right. I mean, just the other day I had somebody in a situation like this. Purchaser company comes in, gives them a contract. They come to me, say, Chris, it looks a bit different than the contract I had previously, and there's nothing really that's different otherwise about it. And I look at it and there's this, you know, potentially ironclad termination clause in there, whereas before that wasn't even in existence. So I said to her that, you know, if you end up signing this contract, it's going to give them the ability to basically get away with just giving you a few weeks of severance on your way out. But if you don't sign the contract and they let you go without that in place, you could be getting, you know, 3-4 times as much. Okay. And it can be a tricky situation because a lot of people want a job. They want the security of the job, but they also don't want to risk, you know, in the event that they're let go, they've now gone from getting, let's say, 8 months of severance to 8 weeks of severance. So it can be challenging for sure. But again, just an example of how this fine print in these contracts can really differ and create a much more different overall relationship or terms of employment that they, like I say, could give you leverage to say, hold up a minute, this is not something I'm agreeable to.
Quick question before we get into a break, leading on what you said right there is what I want to get to when we come back. And that question is, in that scenario where it's a vastly different contract and you say no, who pays the severance, buyer or seller? We'll answer that on the other side if you're wondering. We continue with the Employment Law Show. Stand by. All right, we're back at it. You bet. Mr. Justice, always available for a chat with you. help@employmentlawyer.ca. You want to reach out through email and the phone number to reach him at the firm, 1-855-821-5900. Write that down. And also the website, even before the phone call. You might not need the phone call after going here, and you might find everything you need at pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. Yeah, just before the break, Chris, we're talking about, new employer taking over the biz, throws you a new contract. You're like, nah, I don't like this. It's too different from the other one. I refuse to take this job. If there's severance involved in that scenario, who pays for it? The company going out or the new company?
Yeah, so assuming you've got that good, valid reason, those terms are significantly different, then usually it would be the seller of the business that would be on the hook. You know, if you're out of a job as a result of the purchase and sale for a number of different reasons, the seller would be the one typically that has to provide you that severance. And so depending, again, on what the terms of your employment were with the seller at the time that transition took place, you could be looking at as much as 2 years of severance. So definitely something to pursue.
Anything else you should be aware of as far as the new company coming in, as far as you resigning or something else in the contract that maybe people won't think about automatically?
You want to obviously make sure that, like we said before, there's no probationary period clause. You want to make sure that there's no changes. We've covered that off. As far as just keeping tabs on how the job pans out, you want to make sure that no changes are made that are inconsistent with what you would have agreed to in writing. But also, as far as the contract is concerned, a lot of times actually purchasers of businesses will have or try to have people sign new contracts.
Right.
But they'll sign the contracts with no apparent benefit or gain going to the individual, the employee in that situation. So sometimes even if there is some language in the contract that's a bit of a red flag or could be detrimental, if there isn't consideration going both ways at the time this employee signs the new contract, that could affect things for the company itself as far as being able to enforce the contract. And that's why a lot of times when these situations occur, hey, I'm the new company, I want to keep you on board, here's a contract, you'll see things like little signing bonuses. It doesn't have to be a ton. It could be a few $100, $500 that you're being given, or maybe a little bit of a raise. And oftentimes that's being done so that the contract just essentially has more validity, more enforceability there. That could be a leverage point for some too, in terms of negotiating maybe a better sign-on package. And also depending on your relationship overall with these companies, you might be able to negotiate better terms, better severance terms, better, you know, termination language. So also don't think that it's just take it or leave it proposition. In a lot of these cases, a compromise can also be reached where it kind of, you know, hopefully achieves both ends and the person keeps their job, especially if that's one of their primary goals.
So if that company, you end up signing this contract and there's no what you call consideration, they didn't throw you a bone for signing it. Like you said, it could be extra holidays, a little extra cash. You know, fast forward 5 years down the line and you're let go by that then new company. I mean, could you argue like, hey, way back when they signed this for you, you didn't give them anything. Therefore, you can toss this in the fireplace. Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this even happens in situations where there isn't a purchase and a sale, but, you know, you're just working at a company and 10 years in, you're asked to sign a new contract.
Right.
But, you know, the day after you sign it, your day-to-day job hasn't changed. Your pay hasn't changed. You haven't really accrued any benefit whatsoever at the time you signed the contract. So even if maybe later on you do get a little bump up or whatnot, the focal point is often, you know, when the parties signed this document, you know, were they each getting a benefit? And and in a lot of cases, continued employment is just not going to suffice enough as a benefit. There's got to be something more than that. Again, it doesn't have to be a ton, but yeah, that can be a little loophole that can actually save some employees when, you know, in hindsight, they didn't even think of it. or prior to, they didn't even think of it. But now in hindsight, they're thinking, oh, geez, it could have been a lot worse had maybe they given me a signing bonus or something that would have really sealed it shut, so to speak.
Yeah. We're going to move on to mitigation here momentarily, but you still have plenty of time to ask us your questions. Don't be bashful. There are no dumb questions. You're helping everybody when you make those questions vocal and out on the open here on air. In between that, I want to get to a quick email from Celine. Says, guys, love the show. Question, can I be fired for taking a side gig, a side hustle? What do you think about that, Chris?
Yeah, so very common these days. You know, a lot of people have side gigs or need a side gig or have a few jobs going on at once. So say you have at least one job and you need to take on a side gig for some extra pay. Can I be fired is the question. The short answer would be yes. Employers, you know, in Ontario especially, can fire, you know, workers for pretty much any reason they want, you know, as bad as that may sound to some out there. As long as, of course, there's no discrimination or extreme bad faith going on, it after best reason, you know, and oftentimes people are told that they're just not the right fit or we're going in a different direction or, you know, restructuring, reorganization, pretty broad terms that could probably encompass a lot of different things. But without actual, you know, solid evidence pointing to the contrary, the assumption is likely going to be, okay, fine, you can let him go. So side gig, we don't really like the fact that you have a side gig. Your energy or your efforts are being diverted elsewhere, maybe. We just don't like it, so we're going to let you go. Again, not necessarily the best reason, especially if you can do your first job completely and there's no conflict there. But they still owe you severance. So if you do get let go, that's certainly not a cause situation. I think the only way that taking on another job could even remotely resemble something establishing cause would be if, you know, maybe you, number one, had a contract saying you couldn't work anywhere else or just something to that degree, and you've breached that. There was a conflict of interest. Maybe you're sharing confidential information with your new employer and their competitors in the industry. I mean, there are rare circumstances where this might be possible, but no, in Celine's case, you're going to be owed severance, but you can be fired. It's just going to be a question of, you know, how much severance are they giving you? And as we know, usually employers aren't going to be just throwing at you your best case.
Yeah, I guess if you're moonlighting in a completely different gig, it's one thing as opposed to working for a competitor. Like, you're not going to be doing the same job for Rogers that you do for Bell. Like, I mean, that would be a no-no, in, you know, for an example, right?
Yeah, I mean, even then, I think there are a lot of cases where you could work for a competitor and it not come anywhere near cause. First of all, non-competes in Ontario have been banned, but it comes down to, you know, is there a conflict of interest, of course. Now, that's certainly more possible in a competition-like landscape. But I would say it's probably technically possible. You have to be careful. But I just think in any of these cases, better to get some legal advice, because cause is still relatively a rare occurrence and you could still be throwing away some money. Even if you're not going to get 100 cents on the dollar, maybe there is some risk in your case. It still makes sense to get in touch with a lawyer, get some advice, and, you know, at least figure out what your options are.
You got it. We'll take a short break. I want to get to a question from Madge. I'll read her question on air, that, and we'll get into the topic of mitigation with the remaining time, plus your phone calls. You can call, too, 416-870-6400. We continue with more of the Employment Law Show. Stand by. And we are back at it. John Scholes, along with lawyer Chris Justice from Samfiru Tamarkin LLP. Reach out to Chris anytime when we're not doing the show. How about that? 1-855-821-5900. Email would be help@employmentlawyer.ca as well. Want to get into our discussion here in mitigation momentarily, Chris. But Madge, who dropped the line but hasn't called back, but that's okay. We got her question. Basically said, if an employee can require 3-month probation for someone reentering the workforce later in life, what do you think about that, Bill?
Yeah, so I guess they're just, you know, they took some time off, they're of a certain age, they're coming back into the workforce, and they've got a situation where their employer wants them to sign, I guess, a contract with a 3-month probationary period clause in there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that in general is wrong. I will make a couple comments about probation. However, I know a lot of people think that it's just automatic. You know, you start a job and there's this 3-month probationary period sort of situation, and if you're let go within the first 3 months, your employer can get off the hook as far as paying any severance, which is actually untrue. If you're let go after the first week or first 3 weeks or 2 months, if there's no contract in place with a valid probationary period clause, you are still going to be owed severance. And I've seen situations with people who have been at companies for 1 month getting several months of severance.
Yeah.
So that's number one, just to be mindful of. But if you've got a contract in place, something in writing, and in there is, I guess, what I would classify as a valid probationary period clause, then it would be possible for your employer, regardless of what age you are or what stage you are in life in terms of coming into the workforce, it would be possible for your employer to let you go without cause during that period and not pay you anything as far as severance or notice is concerned.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, and sometimes you'll see that, Chris, and I know you know this is wrong and it doesn't hold water. They'll put a, you know, a 6 month or a 9 month probation, but beyond 3 months, it's pointless. It's like rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic. It's not going to get them anywhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. You could have what looks like a very well-worded probationary clause, but be for 6 months or 9 months. And that's also not to say that if that's the case, they can get away with paying you nothing over a 6 or 9 month period. So that would be a different issue on its own.
Yeah.
But otherwise it just comes down to the good faith efforts of both people involved. It's certainly possible that someone could come into a job at a certain point in their life and not be given a fair shake. You know, if the purpose of the probationary period is to assess the fit, but let's say you're set up to fail, or like I say, you're just not at all treated in a fair manner in that period of time, then that too could lead to damages, that could lead to severance, that could lead to things above just severance. So could be some possible prejudice, you never know. But yeah, no, in general, on Madge's question, can employers ask for this? They can do so, as long as, of course, they're not, you know, operating in any kind of bad faith.
Cool. Let's touch on a couple mitigation points before we wrap up for the morning, pal. Okay, mitigation. What is it? What's it defined as?
Yeah, I thought it'd be good to touch on this just because a lot of people I speak to, you know, they'll say things to me like, hey, Chris, I've been at a company for 20 years. I deserve XYZ dollars. And who cares whether I find a job or what happens after I've been let go? It's nobody's business. It's not my employer's business or my former employer's business. They should just be paying me the severance I am owed. And that there's certainly some truth to that. You are generally going to be owed a certain amount of money regardless of whether you find a job or not. But mitigation essentially refers to this obligation that employees, individuals have who have been, you know, terminated, to after that point or some point after that, make reasonable efforts to seek out a new job, comparable employment to be specific. And so the idea of, you know, quote unquote, mitigating damages is used to reduce that potential compensation or termination severance package that an employer may be required to pay to you. So this can affect your former employer's exposure, essentially, as far as how much severance they have to pay. But it's, of course, going to come down in a lot of cases to what your future exactly holds. If you find a job within a short period of time after being let go, then there's more likelihood that a judge would offset that new income from, you know, your previous employer's exposure, like I say, and, you know, give them a bit more of a way out, so to speak, on the severance end of things.
So other than just going out and, you know, schlepping around for a new gig, what counts as mitigation?
Yeah, so in, you know, generally that's the main sort of form of mitigation, is applying, sending out resumes, LinkedIn, Indeed, you know, all these websites, maybe going hand to hand in some cases, but also things like maybe undergoing retraining. Maybe you're trying to upgrade your skills, get some certification, put yourself basically in a position to get a job. Because a lot of people, maybe they've been working at a company for 30 years, technology is completely changed, and they lost their job through no fault of their own, you know, due to a massive reorg. And now they've got to go back to school or get some accreditation there. So that could be a version of mitigation. Oftentimes people think that maybe self-employment or freelance work doesn't count as mitigation, but usually, you know, income's income. So if it's for John Incorporated or for, you know, Walmart, it usually doesn't matter. The same principles hold. But these would be some of the main, I guess, examples of what mitigation could make up as far as, you know, what are those reasonable efforts that I'm supposed to be adhering to.
Let me get to one quick email. Got 1 minute to go, so let's get it in from Joe. Says, guys, I'm being harassed by my boss. My boss at work. I haven't said anything to anyone as I'm afraid of a retaliation. What options do I have in this case, Chris?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. First of all, there are anti-retaliation, anti-reprisal laws in place. So if your employer punishes you in some way, could be letting you go, could be doing something while you're still there to you, that's a huge issue for employers. So that's meant there to protect you in those cases of retaliation, and hopefully give people a bit more confidence to go forward without fear of much as much of reprisal from their employer. But if you are being harassed, you know, oftentimes I tell people, even though it's hard, you got to voice your concerns. You can't kind of hope it blows over. You got to put your concerns in writing. You got to go through the channels that the company has, anti-harassment policies, and then that's going to trigger their investigation obligation if it wasn't already triggered before that. You know, not to say companies are off the hook if someone doesn't bring a formal complaint, they still got to inquire. But you want to generally try to do your part, make your voice heard, you know, set the record straight, and then hope that the company does that fair investigation.
And we are done with that. Reach out to Chris now that we are done. Anytime, 1-855-821-5900 to do so. And beyond that, help at employmentlawyer.ca. We'll catch you next time in the Employment Law Show.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.